Welcome to Holiday Readings and Remembrances, reflections on the season as told by members of the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. I'm Stan Wright. We go back to the archives of Holiday Readings and Remembrances past as we revisit a reading by Rebecca Johns, assistant professor at Northern Michigan University, about a debt-free Christmas.
This is a short story that I wrote several years ago called Debt-Free Living. Here is Fisk driving his wife and daughter to the mall. It's Christmas, season of light, and in his wallet are three credit cards recently paid off, Visa, American Express, Discover. Clean, cleansed, spotless. A determination not to spoil them again, not to use them for the computer he couldn't afford, the big screen television, the golf clubs, or for the things Janet has found out about only recently, like late-night drinks at the Four Seasons, the trip to Miami with a woman from work. By now the recriminations have ended, more or less, and he has decided he will not fall down that rabbit hole again. He will not use one card to pay off the other, get cash advances when money runs short, raid Cassie's savings account for money to pay the bill. He will be a good husband, a good father. He will be disciplined. He has already traded his consumer mania for the order of exercise, of organic eating, of yoga twice a week. He has learned, with the help of an attractive but utterly professional female therapist, the control of good parenting, mastering his anger, maintaining zen-like calm in the face of Cassie's outbursts, Janet's slow-burning resentment. An art, really. This is another kind. Takes some getting used to, is all. He will have an excellent 401k plan and a responsible 15-year mortgage instead of a careless 30-year one. He will put money in Cassie's savings, which started out as a college fund, but lately is just the fund he will save for the future. Fisk starts humming Jingle Bells. In the back seat, Cassie kicks her legs against the back of her mother's car seat again and again. He can sense Janet's jaw tightening, the shift in her posture that broadcasts her disapproval. Before they left the house, she told him she thought it was a bad idea. The mall too crowded this time of year, and Cassie's still prone to outbursts. Fisk said she should be able to visit Santa like all the other kids. All the other kids aren't 12, Janet said. I want to take her. I think she'll get a kick out of it. Janet was pulling on her socks, yanking up each one like a recalcitrant dog. The heel of one was ripped, her dry, pale skin showing through. She won't get a kick out of it. She'll be terrified. You're being unreasonable. It's just Santa. I'm the mother. It's my job to be unreasonable because it makes you look good. That's not true, he said, going downstairs to make breakfast. He broke eggs one-handed, splattering their yolks. But it is true that Fisk likes being the good father. He likes being the lone dad in the waiting room at the therapist's office, the only male at Barbie-themed birthday parties and brownies. He likes it when old couples approach him at restaurants and parks and tell him how great he is with Cassie. He likes that he is the one who reads Cassie her bedtime story, the one with whom the other parents in their support group swap advice. Like the pure joys of healthy eating, the consuming of clean vegetables, all natural, he knows that the daily consumption of his daughter's organic love makes him a better person. As they pull into the parking lot of the mall, Janet announces she has errands to run. I have a list, so I'll need a little time to myself. Of course, says Fisk. And you'll watch her? Affirmative, Captain. We'll see Santa and stay out of trouble. No toy store, no junk food. Absolutely, he says. Right, sport? Cassie kicks her feet against the back of Janet's seat. The mall is a monument to temptation. Christmas shoppers cram the lot, leaving only a few lonely spaces at the far end, beside a giant pile of dirty snow. Inside, Fisk looks at the mall map of stores selling things he can't afford and decides again that he won't yield. No expensive stereo equipment, no iPod, no burgers or fried things covered in cheese or ice cream or Mrs. Fields. Just Santa and home again. Janet tells him she will meet him back at the food court in an hour after she finishes her Christmas shopping, then disappears into the crowd, her back blending into a sea of jackets, red and blue and black. Afterward, he and Cassie meander through the crowd to the center of the mall, where Santa's castle sits, carved in polyfoam but meant to look like frosted gingerbread. Cassie looks right and left, trying to fix on a spot without a person in it, an impossible endeavor. The line reaches almost all the way back to the food court and moves so slowly, Fisk's feet start to ache. People swarm in and out of the mall like a hive with no queen, carrying bags, pushing strollers. When it is her turn, Cassie won't climb into Santa's lap and stands to the side, even though Fisk has paid for the obligatory photo, which an elf hands to him. It comes into focus slowly, the bright colors taking the longest to settle on a shade. It is the latest in a series of photos, going back to when she was very little, none of which actually show her sitting on Santa's lap. She is always standing to one side, looking away. The prospect of human contact utterly unbearable to her. Yet Fisk treasures these pictures partly for the way they show her progress from a child nearly cut off from all humanity to who she is today, a bright child, content if not happy. He sees a little of himself in there, a bit of his nose and his stubborn chin, but really Cassie looks like her mother, Janet's dark hair and arched eyebrows, her long-lashed eyes. Fisk sometimes wonders if this is why Janet loses patience with Cassie, the changeling, the child whom everyone says looks just like her mother, a reminder of what might have been. They return to the food court. No Janet. Cassie, seeing the toy store, pulls on his arm. She can spend hours in any toy store, touching everything, pushing things with buttons, things that have lights that blink on and off. She has a long attention span, an ability to concentrate so deeply she gets lost, which Janet finds frustrating, but Fisk secretly admires. She is pulling him toward the toy store. He thinks of the pile of presents for Cassie at home, bought on his lunch hours, and hidden in the attic. "What did Mommy say earlier?" he says. Cassie rocks for a second. To head off the tantrum, he says, "Let's find Mommy a Christmas present." He forces himself to stay away from the high-end electronics store, the surround sound system he's had his eye on. Cassie would touch everything anyway, and the salespeople would fidget and sway until they left. No computer store either, not today. He spots a gift shop across the aisle and leads Cassie through the crowd toward the store, where glassware glitters in spotless cases, reflecting the strong colored lights around the windows. "Don't touch anything," he tells her. "Okay, sport?" Cassie rocks a little, but he knows instinctively that she understands. Her hand in his is hot and sweaty. Janet has a thing for Yadro figurines, expensive things, sometimes hundreds for a piece of glass in the shape of a languid girl in a gown or a serene mother hugging her child. Janet has one that cost more than $1,000, a tea party scene, a wedding present from her grandmother, and rows of others on the mantle of the fireplace collected slowly over the years. Birthdays, anniversaries, a row of frozen faces suspended in glass. She never seems to tire of getting a new one. This year it's probably more than he should spend, but when he spots a small one, a hopefully inexpensive one he's pretty sure she doesn't have, he asks the sales girl to get it out of the case for him. The sales girl spots Cassie looking in the cases and tips her head to say hello. "What's your name, sweetheart?" she says. Cassie doesn't answer, but she makes a small noise, almost a sigh. The woman smiles and gives Fisk a little wink. "Aren't you pretty today?" she says. He's taken aback at the woman's familiar manner around Cassie, her easy smile. Strangers usually shied away, looking through Cassie or around her. Is she just being nice, sucking up to the kid to make a sale? The woman is too pretty to be working at the mall. Tall and expensively dressed, with long, elegant fingers, like a piano player's or a poet's. Dark hair and blue eyes, like Janet, except to prettier effect. Newer. He says, "Busy today." She says, "What a sweet girl you have there." He smiles back, "Thank you." That old feeling. In 1 minute he can guess the exact smell of the nape of her neck, the little hairs there, guess the quality of her voice under cover of darkness. And he thinks, if only a man had more than one life, a way to hold on to what is and not have to give up what might be, a moment. But the feel of Cassie's hands pulling at his pants leg is an insistent pressure, an anchor. The woman hands him the figure. He turns it over and looks at the price tag. $400. Very nice, thank you, he says and hands it back, not looking at her, knowing she is probably tired of browsers. He doesn't quite want to leave yet, not empty-handed. Something cheaper, he asks. Behind him, Cassie is picking up a small snow globe, turning it over and over in her hands, which are not as clean as he thought they were, so that she is leaving smeary fingerprints on the glass. Fisk takes it from her and wipes it on the sleeve of his coat. What did I tell you? He says, a little more sharply than he would have liked. Then Cassie starts to rock and moan, a little at first, then more and louder. In a minute she is wailing on the floor, the rubber heels of her sneakers pounding the carpet. Her eyes scrunch up and squeeze tears out of the sides and into her dark hair. Her hands make fists and pound the sides of her head so violently the salesgirl takes several steps back. Fisk leans down to pull his daughter to her feet, but she's heavier than he anticipated, and he has to adjust his stance to pull her off the floor. That's enough, he says. Even on her feet, Cassie continues to wail, her face red and starting to get puffy. And she is too big for this now, almost as tall as her mother, far too big for such a display. He shakes her, first a little. I said, that's enough. We'll go out to the car if you don't stop right now. He is trying to be reasonable, but it's fraying, splitting apart. He has a feeling of tightness in his chest, of not breathing. So much for zen-like calm. He is dimly aware that the shop is silent except for Cassie's moans of frustration. Other shoppers in stiff attitudes of waiting to see what he will do. Everything in the room is fragile, breakable. There are no clear paths or exits. He blows out a breath and walks to the counter where the salesgirl still stands. She is frozen in place. Her desire for them to leave comes off her in waves. Humiliation mounts his face in hot red spots, and he nods at the Yadro figure still on the counter. I'll take it, he says, and pays for it and the sticky snow globe with his credit card, while his daughter still stands rocking and moaning near the counter. Outside at last, he sets Cassie down on her feet and doesn't say a word, just takes her hand with one of his own and shifts the bag with the Yadro figure in it into the other. Why on earth had he bought it? He drags Cassie through the crowds of people like he is trying to swim upstream to die. Still no Janet at the food court, and he starts thinking of all the things he will say to her when she does show up. Pushing, pushing, pushing on all sides, bags bumping into his knees, his feet hurting, thinking he should take the figurine back and get his account credited. $400. Then pulling, Cassie has spotted the toy store again. Dolls in the window, a mob of children, a zoo of oversized stuffed animals, giant pandas and giraffes, more things he can't afford, things she doesn't need. Cassie pulling on his arm as he walks the other way, pulling her after him. And he can hear the whine rise up in her throat, a lumpy wail that starts deep in her belly and works its way to the ends of her hair. Her palm is sweaty in his, pulling, digging in with her heels, and people are impatient to walk around. People pushing in on all sides, and her hands sweaty and slippery, and her feet dragging her toward the toy store, forgetting what he said before about no toy store. Not today, anyway. And she never listened. She never listened. Noise and frustration, Cassie pulling in a direction he did not want to go. Another bump against his back, more pressure, pulling. He lets go. Cassie slips toward the toy store, walking through the door, a crowd of people between him and his daughter, closing between them, and in a minute he can't see her at all. He looks down at his feet like they belong to someone else. Blood rushes to his ears, and the noises fade out. His other hand holds tight to the bag with the porcelain figurine, staring at the entrance to the toy store, the red and gold neon, the constant and consistent pressure of the crowd streaming in and out of the door. He can't say how long he stands there. It might be only a second or two, but Cassie is gone. Then he rushes into the toy store, but there are too many people, lazy, unhurried people with lazy, unhurried lives. In the toy store, he pushes through piles of stuffed animals, pushes his way down the Barbie aisle, scanning the crowd for the shape he knows almost as well as his own face in the mirror, for that aha moment, for the world to right itself, come back into balance. But then a sick, sick feeling. She isn't there. He asks clerks if they have seen a girl of about 12, about 5 feet, long dark hair, wearing a pink shirt, a green coat. She's autistic. She's probably scared. The manager says he will keep an eye out for her. Fisk looks again up and down the aisles, and he stubs his toe on a fire truck someone left in an aisle, squirms past teenagers testing out the newest video games. One of the kids shouts out and startles him, and he turns around. She isn't there. Where did she go? Back out into the mall, the crowds. She could be anywhere. He looks out the door, hoping to see her. Suddenly the mall is as big as an entire town. A small universe, and so crammed with people, he thinks for a moment of pulling a fire alarm. But no, that wouldn't help things at all. She is here, if only he can find her. He imagines predators, prey. Stories about mall kidnappings, torture, trusting girls led away by strangers sold on the black market. On his way to the food court, he knocks over a teenager with an eyebrow ring, apologizes, picks her up without looking at her. Checks the fast food counters, the ice cream stand, the candy store, any likely place. No Cassie, just tired Christmas shoppers, other parents, noise. He turns around and sees his daughter sitting on her mother's lap at a table in the food court. She is rocking inconsolably, like she still believes she will never, ever be found. Fisk walks up to them. Janet holds his eyes. Her arms are around Cassie's waist as she rocks along with her daughter and pats her hair. It's okay, baby, she says, mostly to herself, because they both know Cassie will be inconsolable for some time to come. It's all right. Fisk says, we got separated in the crowd. I didn't know where she went. His voice sounds weak and thready to his own ears. Janet says, it's all right, honey. We're all right. Daddy's here, and now we can go home. Cassie hiccups, and her rocking slows. Janet says, do you want to go home? Cassie allows Janet to lead her toward the mall entrance, back out into the snow, Fisk following behind like it was he who had been lost. Outside, the trees are wrapped in strings of white lights that shiver in any little breeze. Fisk pushes his hands in his pockets, but they won't seem to get warm. In the car, Fisk realizes he doesn't have the bag with the Yadro figurine. It was in his hand in front of the toy store, but he can't remember where or when he set it down. He goes back inside to look for it, searching the aisles of the toy store, the food court, cornering store managers, mall security. Has anyone seen a bag? Has anyone turned one in? Of course not. It's Christmas. People race in and out, lost in their own problems, buying things they can't afford. DVDs, running shoes, pieces of jewelry, running up their credit cards, sitting down for fast food meals, tacos and burgers, MSG galore. Fisk retraces his steps, trying to remember the exact moment he lost it, but it's gone.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a Public Radio 90 production produced at the WNMU-FM studios in the Learning Resources Center on the campus of Northern Michigan University. I'm your producer and host, Stan Wright. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.